Hello, I'm James Fitzsimons, and welcome to The Career Scoop, a podcast all about career progression, advice, and experiences aimed at assisting those who are in career transition themselves. My guest today is Shauna Moran. Shauna helps remote and hybrid teams increase engagement and productivity while diminishing burnout through human-centric training, coaching, and high-performance process creation. Shauna is based in Vancouver, Canada, and has just launched her new book, Managing Employee Burnout. Shauna, it's great to have you back on the Career Scoop, beaming in from Vancouver to tell us all about your new book, Managing Employee Burnout. But before we get to that, how have you been?
I've been good, and it's great to chat to you again, James, and see you again and see and catch up on how many things have changed since the last time we spoke, you know. For me, I've been really good, been busy, and in the process of moving to a little island outside of Vancouver City. So really excited about that, and even more passionate about remote work, how it's enabled me to do this. So really looking forward to it.
That's great. So what is the book about? Tell us.
So the book is called Managing Employee Burnout, How to Develop and Create a Happy, Engaged and Well Team. So it's about burnout, but it's not just about what burnout is. It's really looking at how burnout impacts us specifically in remote and hybrid organizations, and what are the actual root causes of burnout. So when the pandemic started in March 2020, I had so many companies contact me as a remote and hybrid team performance coach. How do we move to remote? How do we create our culture? How do we engage our team? They were all kind of the surface level conversations. And about a month into the pandemic, I had an influx of needs and conversations from organizations saying, help, our team are burning out really quickly and we don't really know what to do. And I remember looking at a piece of research by LinkedIn and the Mental Health Association that said at the end of March, since the pandemic started, on average, professionals were clocking up an extra 28 hours of work per month than their usual working hours than before they were remote, before the pandemic. And I thought, okay, this is a real problem here. And not many people were talking about it. And what I found was a lot of organizations were just trying to put a plaster over the solution, over the problem, right? So they were like giving wellness days or adding more health benefits or doing meditation classes or yoga classes. And that was all nice, but was it actually solving the problem? And that's when I started to really deep dive into the research and work with these organizations on establishing what these root causes were and what tangibly they could do to actually alleviate that burnout within their teams. And what I found, and this is what the book is about, what I found is there's three major areas of consideration when we're looking at burnout, right? A lot of organizations think, oh, well, my team are burnt out. That must be that team member's fault, right? They're doing something wrong. They're not looking after themselves. They're not setting healthy boundaries. And while that might be true, it might also be true that your team member can't set healthy boundaries because they don't have the support from their leader, or because they have too much and unrealistic timelines on their plate, or because there's a lack of psychological safety present that they feel like they can't do it out of fear. So looking at those sections, there's three major areas. There's the self, what we do for ourselves to manage our own stress levels, to complete the stress cycle, and to develop that emotional intelligence within ourselves that we're aware of when we're getting to that capacity and we know what to do. We have the resources, tools, and knowledge to know what to do to support ourselves. Then there's the second piece, which is the leadership piece. And leaders have such a high level of influence over employees' well-being and their productivity and their engagement. So looking at how leaders are supporting their team, how they're creating realistic workloads, how they're helping them get clarity on what their roles and responsibilities are, how they're leading by example themselves and creating that psychological safety. And then the final piece is looking at the organizational piece. So what are your processes? What are the ways that you're setting up your team for success in terms of communication and collaboration? So, for example, James, the majority of companies that I work with, when they have this problem, they usually have back-to-back meetings. So their teams are usually completely overwhelmed at the amount of meetings that they're having every day. And then they have to tack on an extra hour or two to actually get any deep work time done, right? Which is, you know, that actually getting work done and that output done. So looking at those processes, looking at the culture of your organization, and that takes time to change. So these are the three major areas. And what I found is that it's not one or nothing. It usually is a combination of all three when it comes to looking at why our teams are burning out, why they're experiencing this, and actually how do we solve it?
Wow. I mean, you've just read that so simply. It's the self-management. There's the leadership piece, of course, and then the processes that drive an organization. So where do we start? So sometimes, you know, it has to come from the top of an organization to start with. So how does a leader say, I'm doing fine, but when I was their age, this is the way I did it, and why can't they do it? And maybe I'm a little bit older than you. I understand that mentality, but it's all changed now, because as you said, that stat is a frightening stat of, was it 27% more hours or something?
28 more hours per month professionals were clocking up. That was at the very start of the pandemic. More recent statistics, 7 out of 10 professionals experience workplace burnout. 69% of women, 56% of men feel chronically exhausted. So that's the current landscape. So it's still very much a problem, if not more of a problem.
So how do we get the leadership, who might be a little bit, and they're busy as well, and they're stressed, and they're humans as well. How do we get them to listen, to stop?
Great question. When I think about this change, right, because a lot of this is a change in mindset. And what you said, James, is there is different generations. There are different generations working together. Previous generations that would have had, that would have built their career in organizations that well-being wasn't even coming into the conversation, right? So how do we shift that? And that takes time. What I do when I work with an organization is I look at who are the leaders that kind of are more heart-centered. So those are the leaders that automatically understand, they just get well-being. They understand that if my team feel well, then they will be more productive, then they will achieve a better quality of work, right? So they just kind of get that, right? And then there's leaders that think more with their head, and they need to see, how does the bottom line actually, how is that impacted by our employees feeling well and feeling happy in themselves? And what's the correlation there? And how can we actually pull that data? Because if I can see that in doing these activities and actually making a conscious effort to increase well-being and alleviate that burnout within our team, that that's going to impact our revenues, you know, and the impact we want to make in our bottom line, I'm in. So we have to work with both types of leaders. You know, we have to understand the data. And at the end of the day, we are running a business. But we also have to understand that we have to support our human capital. So data is really important. And I also have a free video course that I can send you for the show notes if anybody's listening and their organization is going through burnout and they need some data. I have a 8-step process that you can actually go through within your organization and collect data on this and actually start to measure where your team are at, understand the specific root causes. And then you can also use that as a way to measure that against, you know, your KPIs or your organizational goals. So, you know, because sometimes for leaders, it's not enough to say, well, research shows that we're more productive, more creative, less stressed when we take breaks at work. Right? Like it's not enough to just share this research. They have to see it within their own organization.
It's interesting because in my other businesses in recruitment, I'm seeing a lot of younger professionals. And the reason they're moving is because there's a gap in communication. There's a block from people maybe my vintage who, now we didn't have the internet, so you could leave work. You weren't all the time. You could switch off. You could make football practice. you had a switch off time. I see my own daughters, and they're all professionals. Like, they work late, and there's emails coming in from all around the world, all different times. And it's hard to cut and go and get up in the morning. So it's yes. I see a lot of young professionals moving because of that. And that's yep. incentive, I think, because if you lose knowledge that you've trained or who joined you, walk out of the organization, that there's a data number very easily to put, and a dollar number, a very significant dollar number to put against yeah. that.
Absolutely. And what's the cost to you as a leader? You know, so I would ask a leader if you're kind of thinking, well, my team, I think they are quite stressed. They are unhappy. What's the cost to you? For example, are you having underperformance issues all of the time? Are you spending a lot of time micromanaging because you're worried about certain things getting done? Are you trying to get cover for people because people are taking sick leave or stress leave? You know, there's probably a huge cost of time there as well that I would ask leaders to look at. And yeah, usually that's quite high, right? Our time is a huge commodity.
Yeah. I mean, it's also if you lose somebody that's a valuable part of your team, knowledge walks out the door, but also the cost of replacement, whether it be a recruitment fee, it's huge disruption. That's what I see. And that puts more pressure up on the leaders themselves because of that.
Yeah. And then your whole team are going through yet another change, you know, and that's more change, that's more disruption. And that's an impact on your culture as well and their productivity. So it's, you know, it's a huge thing. And I think retention and retaining team members is really becoming ever challenging. You know, this quiet quitting, I think quiet quitting has been around for a long time. But, you know, this quiet quitting, people are saying, you know what, I've had enough. I don't want to work in this type of environment anymore. I'm going to seek something else, something different.
And also that feeds out to the market, and it may be that this is not an organization people should go work in. So that could be incorrect, but it could be a one-off situation, or it may be correct. So there's a whole lens to view it. Tell me about you mentioned about process and about the, you know, meeting mm-hmm. after meeting after meeting. How can that be? Is that mean taking a break from a meeting, or is there any hard tips, you know, should have 3 meetings in a row, take a break. What does the book say about that?
Love that question. When we look at communication, there's 2 types of communication that any team are kind of leaning into. There's the synchronous communication, or communication in real time. So like our meetings or phone calls, if we're in the office, popping in to, you know, see somebody in their office. And then there's asynchronous communication, which is communicating in delayed time. So things like our Microsoft Teams chat or Slack, if we use that, project management boards, even emails. So a lot of written form. And the more into it you get, the more you can evolve asynchronous communication. So for example, adding things like Loom videos, if you've ever heard of those, James, they're videos where you can share your screen and you can talk for a couple of minutes. And it saves the need for that conversation. Sometimes the conversation is still important. Meetings are still important. But when we think about the 2 types of communication, meetings and synchronous, usually they're not great quality. You know, when I coach people on a one-to-one level, I'll pull up their calendar. We'll look at all the meetings and I'll ask them, you know, do you need to be there? Have you contributed to this meeting? When was the last time you did? Do you have a running agenda? Do you know what needs to be discussed? What's the objective of this meeting? What are the action items? How many other people from your team or your department are there? And does that make sense? So we reality test those meetings. And that's the problem with meetings. Not a lot of people are reality testing them. A meeting invite comes in, it's accepted. And then it's full of meetings with no agendas, you know, meetings that are 60 minutes that could probably be 25 minutes in some cases. The amount of people I have and leaders that I work with where all their team members are at a meeting, none of them are contributing, only them as the leader. And it's like, okay, well, why are they there? Would it not make sense to have an asynchronous update afterwards? Right. And I'll give you another example of that. You know, I work with a lot of teams on sharing information. So a lot of times we have meetings to just share information and updates. And that's important to receive those updates. But is a real-time meeting really needed, especially if we're working across time zones? Usually it's not. So one thing that you can do whether it's in Slack or Microsoft Teams, is to actually add an automated tool within that where everybody gets a message, answers the same question, and it's posted within a specific channel. And that allows for a level of flexibility. It allows for that knowledge management to be captured somewhere. And it allows for a discussion potentially afterwards with higher quality based on what people have answered. So does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I know. I'm nearly thinking about like WhatsApp. You can send a message to somebody. And within that message, you can discuss the, and they can listen to whenever they want to. So maybe when it comes back online, they're up to speed. And that meeting becomes much more efficient, or that discussion becomes much more efficient.
Exactly. Yep. And it's capturing that information before a discussion. So in those daily stand-ups that are in written form, one question I recommend to teams is to ask, what are the blockers and what do you need to discuss in order to move forward? And when that is captured, an agenda is then essentially created, you know, for a deep collaboration meeting. So we're moving from shallow collaboration, which is just sharing information back and forth, to deep collaboration, which is problem solving, brainstorming, supporting each other, moving forward, removing blockers, retrospectively, you know, analyzing as a team. And that's engagement in itself. You know, a lot of team members I see super smart, super creative, passionate about their job, but the shallow collaboration is just unfulfilling and boring. You know, it's like, I want to get into the meaty stuff within our team. You know, I want to have these really important conversations about, you know, brainstorming where we're moving forward and sharing ideas. And that in itself is engagement, which isn't often discussed.
No, I hear what you're saying. That's the practicality and more efficient in a sense like that. You know, you're not getting into the that kind of meeting people switch off. It's a rote rather than a collaborative looking for real input.
Exactly. Yeah.
And going back onto the kind of the burnout when we started at the top. So an individual, when do you know you're burnt out, or when do you know you're not burnt out, and where's the gray area?
Yeah. Great question. So like burnout, and the term workplace burnout is the feeling of extreme physical and emotional exhaustion. And it's actually classified by the World Health Organization and was in 2019. So their definition of burnout is that it's a syndrome conceptualized as resulting from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. And successfully managed is the piece that I really focus on, right? So, you know, we've all experienced levels of stress, and there's healthy stress that we feel, you know, in order to get something done, to get to the finish line. And the way I describe burnout is that healthy stress getting to a point where it's closed off, there's calm again, and then maybe a little bit of healthy stress again, right? Is that stress cycle being completed? So when we have stress within our systems, within our nervous systems, if that's continuous over time and it's not managed, that's when it starts to become burnout. And the symptoms, you know, that people feel at burnout, there's a couple of different stages of burnout as well. The symptoms that people feel is, you know, those feelings of exhaustion, energy depletion, mental distance from one's job, feeling hostile or cynical towards your career or your job, you know, that reduced productivity. So I think supporting team members in knowing what healthy stress looks like versus unhealthy stress, right? And understanding how they can manage their stress cycle and close off that stress cycle. So for example, if we're working on a project with a tight timeline and we're working across time zones, maybe we're working different hours and we're pretty connected to our phones, right? Because it's a really important deadline and we're working across time zones. knowing that there's going to be high levels of stress during that time as a team, to say, look, this is upcoming. There's going to be heightened levels of stress as we work through this. These are our expectations. These are our best practices. But what is after this? What's coming after this project? And how can we have the season of winding down? You know, how can we implement the seasons within how we work together as a team, right? Because we can't be 100% productive all the time. So what are our best practices after that timeline has been met? For example, are we all taking notifications off our phone? And for some people, they're going to have to do that kind of work within themselves, because I do notice that a lot of people are actually addicted to that stress. And subconsciously, those triggers that we face, whether, and a lot of it has to do with the phones, as you mentioned earlier, James, with, you know, your daughters as well, with emails and notifications, a lot of it has to do with technology because we are so connected. So we have to understand our own triggers. You know, first of all, leaders have to create that safe space and that awareness to say, these are the seasons that we're coming up against. Let's create some time for just calmness, coming back down. Let's retrospectively look at everything. Let's get ourselves back into just our normal rhythms and routines and best practices and healthy habits. And then there's the work we have to do as individuals as well, right? So, you know, am I putting healthy boundaries in place for myself? Because it's safe to do it on my team, but I might tell myself, oh, well, I'll just keep it on my phone, you know, because I might feel bad or because I'm needed. Or, and some of us have that productivity anxiety based on whatever trauma we've experienced in our past, right? Like, you know, I work with people on this all the time, and people can really struggle to switch off because of the way that their neural pathways or their beliefs have been created from a very young age. So that's really getting into the self piece. But yeah, I think the seasons, I'm bringing that in, important, knowing we can't be 100% productive all the time, setting the expectation that things are going to get a bit busier right now. What can we do to wind that down at the end so we can complete that stress cycle and come back rejuvenated as a team, ready to go again?
Okay, that's not easy really, because someone has to put the hand up and say, I'm stuffed. And that doesn't happen, or does happen depending on the environment, depending on how that person's wired.
Any
tips on how someone, if they'd feel that they're wired a particular way, that they've got to perform, and they're in negative, they're spent, they're kind of in the fight and flight too much. Yeah. And so how do they put their hand up to say, I'm struggling? Because it's just completely against how they think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great question. First and foremost, you know, that what I call productivity anxiety, and this happens a lot with remote workers, because we're working on our own and we might not be clear on what our responsibilities are or what the expected output is. We just try and do it all in the hope that, you know, everything will be okay and we'll be seen as good performers and doing our job. You know, I had somebody at a workshop this week and they said, when I work from home, I actually don't leave the desk, or I don't want to leave the desk in case anybody messages me and I don't message back. You guys might think I'm not working. So I overwork when I'm at home. So this is what I mean. What can we do about it? The first thing I always recommend is, how are we measuring our output? Not our input, our output. So at the end of the day, throughout the day, are you documenting somewhere the output that you have achieved throughout your day? Are you looking at that on a weekly basis as well? Are you capturing that somewhere? And are you reporting on that to your leader, to your team? Usually when we have a level of transparency and visibility over that, people can start to feel better within themselves, because it's kind of like, I've shared what I've done. And everybody's good with that, right? Like, there's no questions or concerns around that. My nervous system can relax a bit. So looking at those outputs, and as leaders, for any leaders listening, ensuring that you support your team in understanding what those expected outputs are for them on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis. You know, what are those expected outcomes, those outputs, rather than working 8, 10, 12 hours a day? It's like, no, this is what the output is. And how you do that, there's flexibility in that, right? And that's the kind of approach, the culture, the mindset that we're moving towards.
And just two questions. Just can you share? I was not mentioning the individuals. Someone, a leader who just pre and post transformation. Just the story, and just a very quick overview how it presented, and then how you were able, and maybe the book would be able to get someone to move to the light side, not the dark side. Maybe the wrong way of putting it, or that team member who just was so swamped, just wasn't able to actually, the productivity anxiety just overwhelmed them. How they moved. Just a quick any overview. Just a quick
sense. So, I mean, really, it's understanding, like, I'll think of one leader in particular that I coached on a one-to-one level. And, you know, this particular leader was at burnout stage and didn't really realize it and was just trying to keep going. And I kind of knew, you know, as a coach, you guide people towards their own awareness and their own aha epiphany moments, right? It's not about saying, here's what I see, here's what you need to do. My approach is very much, especially when we're working with the self, people have to come to their own awareness. It's not my responsibility, or it's not my job to assume anything, right? So this particular leader, we did a lot of coaching around the belief systems that they were operating from. And their major belief in this case was they grew up in a kind of, I would say, poor household, and created the belief within themselves that in order for them to survive, they needed to overwork. That was kind of the mentality there. And this particular leader was in his 40s. And he was actually very successful. You know, that overworking, he really identified, this isn't actually serving me, it's actually hindering me at this stage. It served me in my 20s, not serving me anymore, and actually not serving my team. It's actually causing a lot of problems within my team because they're doing the same that I'm doing. And it's also impacting my family, my personal relationships. And it was really when he got to a stage where he took a vacation, came back from vacation, and it was like, whoa, there's these two different ways of being and showing up every day. What's the middle ground? So I guess, and through the coaching process, it is that, right? It's about bringing your client on a journey where they can see their own situation without judgment and without that bias, and bringing those beliefs to conscious awareness. When it's brought to conscious awareness, we can actually start to work with it and change it. That's, you know, the first piece of it. So that was a big shift.
How long, this is a very functional question, and how long does it take once people get the eureka moment to change the muscle memory?
It can take...
They're fighting against their muscle memory. So that's the... Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. That's why you coach for a while, right? Because that's their level of accountability. So in this particular case, one of the big takeaways for this leader was removing notifications from his phone because he didn't need it. But he was, I guess, subconsciously like picking up the phone and then going in and unconsciously scrolling and checking emails and checking Slack, even though there was nothing there, right? So it was the habit and the action that came from that old belief. So one of the next steps was for him to remove that off his phone and have a conversation with his team about availability. And he had the conversation, he removed it off his phone, and then something happened and he reinstalled it again. And, you know, he caught himself in that moment and he brought it up. He said, look, I reinstalled it again. I want to understand, what was that moment? What was that choice I made in that moment? And what can I do differently the next time? So again, we're looking at what was the trigger that led him to do that. And what was the cost of that, right? So getting really clear on it. So the accountability can take time, and for not everybody has the opportunity to work with a coach on this sort of thing. What I would say is, for those listening, that maybe you've taken something from this example, or maybe you want to create better habits or practices for yourself and you're not sure how, you can't get the means to get coaching, whatever that is, create accountability within your household, your friends, your team, right? Who are the people? Who are your friends? Who are the people that you can talk to? You know, say to each other, look, I want to set better boundaries for myself, healthier boundaries for myself. These are the things I want to do. This is how I want to feel. Here are my next steps on doing it. How do you feel about this? Are you interested in us being accountability partners? What does that look like? It could be you catch up every week, every 2 weeks, and you just have a half an hour discussion of here are the things that have worked for me. Here's what I've struggled with. Here's what I'm holding myself accountable to moving forward. So you can create that for yourself and that supportive environment. And I think that's important for us to all have. Like myself and my partner hold ourselves accountable to our phones in the evening all the time. You know, we pull each other up on it.
And it's habit as well, of course.
It's habit. It's habit and understanding as well. The way technology is set up, it's set up to be addictive.
No, I mean, that's it's very useful. I mean, we're having a conversation from Ireland to Vancouver, which is hugely empowering. Whereas 20 years ago, we couldn't do that. But yes, there is that sense of it. And that switch off when the ping comes in or the notification, as I said, is the reflex that people respond.
And the reflex, yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you've ever watched the Social Dilemma on Netflix. Have you ever watched that documentary?
No, I didn't watch it.
No, very, very good documentary. And it actually talks about how the ping or the red notification is actually triggered to send our nervous system into fight or flight.
Interesting. Gosh. Mm-hmm. I don't know who invented that. I don't know who invented that.
Maybe I know.
If they're not sitting so easy, maybe they are sitting easy. Maybe they don't mind. So where do we get this book? How do we get it?
So it's available for pre-launch right now. So you can go ahead and order it. I'll send you the links. It's on Amazon. And I'll send you also a special link from my publisher and offer your listeners a 20% discount at checkout as well using that link. So I'll send that to you, James, and you can put it in the show notes if you want.
That's fabulous. And just to share at the end, which probably should have said at the talk, the range of sectors you're providing coaching to and you're working right across the world. Just give us a quick line on that.
Yeah, all across the world, Ireland, the UK, Germany, Canada, the US. It doesn't matter where clients are in terms of industries. You know, since the pandemic, I've worked with all types of industries, a lot in the tech sector, in the finance sector, government bodies. So it's very diverse. I've worked with Enterprise Ireland, Quilsha, National Broadband Ireland for all the Irish listeners, companies like Webflow, Infinera, so lots of bigger organizations, as well as startups. You know, I do a lot of work with CEOs and founders and startups to try and create this culture and to support them in developing their leadership skills and their processes. So,
and maybe this is an unfair question. Is there any one industry, I'm thinking of professional services, that this is rampant, that it's just, it's there may be too many alphas, I'm using that, just too many, that they just, they fly to the sun too often. Is there any
where burnout is rampant?
Yeah.
Particular? Yeah. Agency world, agency business type models, there is high burnout rates, high stress level rates. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with just the way that the business model is, really project based, money in exchange for time, high pressure. Especially, I've done some work with lawyers and that industry. I've worked with clients like KPMG. That is a high intensity environment as well, with deadlines to meet, clients all over the world, team members all over the world. So, those particular industries, it's definitely a lot more challenging, I would say, for them. Yeah.
No. I was going to suggest lawyers and accountants, but I was holding yeah. my tongue there, you know, with being deals around the world and different time zones and trying to straddle. And that really seems to one that's it, you know. That is just great, Sean. I'm so delighted and best of luck with the launch.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to receiving the information. Obviously, we'll share it with the podcast. Or is anything else? Any three tips or five tips that you'd say to anyone who might be listening to say, if you did these five little things or three little things in your day, that would change everything.
Absolutely. So number one, think about what are the things that trigger you that lead you to overworking or procrastination. So being aware of that trigger. So phone, emails, multitasking, whatever it is. Number two, find some time to be proactive in your week rather than reactive. So thinking about maybe a Friday afternoon, a Monday morning, definitely if you're starting out, think about end of the week. So you're prepared going into a Monday, but using that proactive time to think about what are the outputs I want to achieve this week? Where am I going to find some time for deep work for myself, uninterrupted time, versus just being in meetings all of the time? And how am I scheduling time for me every day? So starting with one boundary, that's the third piece. What's the one boundary that you want to create for yourself in your workday? It could be something in the morning. It could be a lunch break, starting there, lunch away from the desk, actually having dedicated, even if it's 30 minutes to start with, one habit that's going to make a difference to how you feel. Thinking about that healthy boundary and starting with just one. And as you get into that habit, you can build another one. The fourth thing would be accountability. So where can you find accountability and share this within either your team, your friend group, your family, maybe you have other friends that are working remotely, but who can you speak to about this work that you're doing and why you're doing it? So you can have some level of accountability and support there. If you can speak to your leader, your direct manager, wonderful. Even better if you can have somebody within your team. And the final thing I would say to someone is, I mean, I'm thinking about anyone that's listening that's experiencing burnout right now, you know, and I know there are probably some people because, you know, 7 out of 10 professionals are experiencing it. And I would say to them is the answer is not to keep going at the same pace. Right? Something needs to change. And that's a good thing. There's a positive in that. So look at what can you do to support yourself, right? Maybe it is speaking to somebody internally. If that is not the case, if you feel like you don't have the safety to speak to somebody internally, whether it's your manager, another manager, your HR department, you know, is there somebody else that you can speak to, like a coach, to support you in navigating that change? If you are at a really challenging point, it might be good to get some mental health support. Speak to, for example, a counselor or a therapist. So reaching out for support. It's okay that you're feeling this way. You know, look at the research that I shared today. So many of us, so many professionals are experiencing that. But the answer is not to just keep going and do nothing and think it's going to go away, because it's not. So, support. There's professionals out there that can support you.
So really the final message you're giving, it's okay to put your hand up.
It's okay to put your hand up. It's okay to ask for help. Yeah.
That's a lovely way to finish. Shona, I wish you all the best with
Thank you.
I enjoy our chats and best to David, your partner who we talked with on the Career Scoop a number of months ago. And I wish you all the best with the book and ongoing success with your own business. And hopefully you're managing your own energies appropriately.
Thank you so much, James, for having me. Really appreciate it. Take care.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Career Scoop, brought to you by Elevate Career Advice and Elevate Executive Selection, Dublin and Bermuda. I'm James Fitzsimons, and I hope you've enjoyed listening. Bye.